For many, the issue of prisoners' rights is out of sight, out of mind. But a recent hunger strike of nearly 30,000 California inmates drew international attention to the condition of America's prisons. The prisoners, who began striking in July, banded together to call for an end to the use of extended solitary confinement, a practice which many human rights groups have likened to torture. Now, after 2 months of hunger striking, the prisoners ended the protest to accept the promise of legislative hearings on the matter. But the use of solitary is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to America's incarceration machine. This country has only 5% of the world's population, yet holds 25% of the world's prisoners, according to the NAACP. Join me now to discuss how it got to be this way is Eugene Puryear, author of Shackled and Chained, Mass Incarceration in Capitalist America. Thank you so much for coming on, Eugene.
No, thank you so much for having
me. Always a pleasure. Eugene, I wanted to show this chart to our audience showing that no country incarcerates a higher percentage of its population than the U.S. What is the main factor behind this shocking statistic?
Well, I think the main factor behind this massive growth we've seen in the U.S. prison population, what's come to be known as mass incarceration, is really in the context of the development of U.S. capitalism. Ultimately, it was a surplus population problem. What you have is, if we see the post-World War II period in the United States was a period of so-called rising prosperity, it created amongst people this feeling that life should continue to always get better, living standards should get higher. The civil rights movement raised a similar sort of expectation among black Americans that they would be integrated into this quote-unquote American dream. But what we saw with the economic crisis of the 1970s is not just a general rightward shift in the country, but a decision that social services and jobs programs and creating jobs for people would go by the wayside, which created, with the rise of technology as well, this issue of what are you going to do with this growing number of unemployed and underemployed people, particularly those concentrated in the ghettos, as it were, the people of color, black Americans, who have a traditional revolutionary sort of a rebellious legacy in the history of the country. And that sort of confluence came together to create the policies of mass incarceration as we know them. Of course, the drug war would come a little bit later, providing a crucial fuel to that fire.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over that. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. So just as I say we aren't gonna let any dog or water hose just turn us around, we aren't gonna let
Good evening, America. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart. Welcome to AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. Lisa Stewart and Lamont Banks are on vacation this week. And Cliff, how you doing?
Doing good.
Sitting in the chair tonight in support of our other two hosts who are not here this evening is Dennis Merritt. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing awesome. How you doing, Sam?
Doing well. Our phone number this evening is 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. We invite our listeners to call in if you have questions or comments. As that opening clip showed, we're going to be talking a little bit this evening about the prison situation here in the United States. And we're going to compare our prisons to those of prisons in other parts of the world. And, you know, it's sort of a bleak picture, don't you think, Dennis?
Oh, very bleak. A very bleak picture. Like in Germany and other countries, they're trying to rehabilitate. In America, it seems like we're just trying to overcrowd our prisons. I don't know if it's about a dollar. Or if it's just about vengeance, you know. So I guess as we go through tonight, we'll find out a lot more why we do it a lot different than the other countries.
And it's definitely, and I think we'll be sharing some information that points to the fact that it is definitely getting to the point of talking about some dollars. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later. But first, our disclaimer, we want to ensure that our listeners know that we are not attorneys, and a Just Cause AJC Radio does not provide legal advice. So please contact your personal legal advisor for any of your legal needs. And the opinions expressed by callers or guests do not reflect that of a Just Cause or AJC Radio. But as always, thank you for tuning in and choosing to spend a little time with us this evening. So, Cliff, let's jump to some current news here. You know, one of the things that has happened over this past week, and we have talked time and time again, and we're going to cover news before we get to the main story or our main topic of comparing the prisons. But we've talked time and time again about the threat of ISIS to the homeland, to the United States. And we just had another tragic situation to occur here in the past few days in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And that is that of Muhammad Abdulaziz just shooting up a recruiting center and then going to a military institution, a military post, I should say, and got into a gun battle with law enforcement where he lost his life. He shot and killed four other people. Now we have an update that one of the servicemen who was wounded has now passed. So now the number is up to five who fell victim to this senseless shooting. So, Cliff, what do you what do you think is going on with this situation?
Well, the first thing that really gets you about this, when the story first came out, you know, and I don't know if law enforcement was trying to say, you know, hey, this guy isn't dangerous or whatever, when they made the statement that, hey, this guy isn't on any terrorist list. We haven't been tracking him. We have no reason to believe that he has any type of, terrorist relations. He's not ISIS. All these things they said about him that I guess they were trying to say, look, this don't think that this is an ISIS attack or some attack of terrorism. But now when we get to update, we find out this guy had gone to Jordan. They now have his uncle in Jordan that he was staying with when he was there. They now have him under arrest. So they haven't said any charges or have been brought against him. But they're basically saying, hey, now his uncle is somebody that we're looking at. Well, if he stayed with his uncle while he was in Jordan a year ago, now they're finding out that, you know, in some of his writings and some of the things that he said on social media or in person that, you know, hey, he has these anti-American sentiments. And now they're finding this out. What I want to know is, why is it that they weren't watching this guy? How is it he got his hands on guns? They still haven't said, you know, that, hey, the gun he had was in his possession illegally. That's the next thing that'll come out. I was like, oh, you know, by mistake, he was allowed to purchase guns. Even his family member, his mother and father said he was a heavy drug user. So they were always trying to figure out, you know, where was he at? And the fact that he wasn't on a watch list is what really gets you. It's like, well, why were you not watching him? If now suddenly his uncle, you guys have arrested him over in Jordan, he's under arrest, and this guy spent all his time with his uncle, why were you not watching him and seeing all the signs that now they're digging up? Now they're saying, oh, when we go do this research and we do that research, you know, the old saying is hindsight is 20/20. We need to be able to be proactive in America with all the things that are going on, all the everything that's going on in the Middle East with ISIS, everybody who's saying, hey, there's sleeper cells over here. We need to be much more vigilant, and we need to implement systems that will give us some type of chance against these type of attacks on the homeland.
And, you know, Cliff, in the latest news article that we pulled this evening, CNN is reporting that even his family detected that he was acting weird when he came back from Jordan. And, you know, they supposedly sent him away because, like you said, they wanted to get him away from the influences that he was exposed to there in Chattanooga with drugs and so forth. But then when he came back, if he was acting strange and he was posting anti-U.S. Postings on the Internet And then he started doing all types of research. And you know, he was sending mixed signals as well, because he had some friends there in Chattanooga who are reporting to the FBI that he was saying that what ISIS was doing was wrong and all this kind of stuff. So he was kind of like on one side saying, you know, this stuff is just really crazy what ISIS is doing. But then on the other hand, he was all along apparently planning to right. go into action. I was mentioning before the show, I don't know, Cliff and Dennis, if you remember that movie Manchurian Man?
Yeah.
Denzel Washington. I mean, that's what it seems like. You know,
it's like
he went to Jordan and got programmed.
Yeah, everything, all of what he's saying is, you know, that sounds real good. But his actions should have been what were tracked. His actions, like, of getting guns and from his parents, from his own parents' admission, is that he was a drug abuser.
Yeah.
Then he goes to a foreign country, a hostile country, for all intents and purposes, and then comes back to the U.S. How is it that he wasn't on a list being tracked? That is what still baffles me. And the fact that the FBI is like, oh, no, he wasn't on any watch list, so you don't have to worry about this guy being a terrorist. Well, guess what? He killed 5 of our servicemen. All of our servicemen are very important, but when you look at the people that this guy, you know, took out in his random or not so random rampage, the Marine Gunnery Sergeant, who and I'll use their names because they deserve to have recognition. Marine Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Sullivan. He was a 2-time Purple Heart recipient. He served 3 tours of duty. Lance Corporal Squire K. Wells, better known as Skip. This kid just graduated from high school
and
3
joined
years
up
ago.
In 2014.
Joined up in 2014, had already earned a National Defense Service Medal.
Yep.
Marine Staff Sergeant David Wyatt served 2 tours in Iraq and 1 in Afghanistan. Marine Sergeant Carson Holmquist, he was a husband and a father, served 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan. Navy Petty Officer Randall Smith, a logistics specialist who saw the gunman in the attack and warned people around him, basically saving the lives of other people and family members. But he was unable to get away. So, I mean, these are the men and women who put their lives on the line for us as a nation every day.
And we definitely show honor to them and give honor and respect to them and condolences out to their families.
Absolutely. And we should do everything in our power as a nation to try to protect our service.
And to me, what baffles me is how many lives do we have to lose before we accept the fact, as the United States of America, that our so-called system that we have in place to protect our borders is not working. I mean, how many lives do we have to lose before finally somebody says, okay, there has to be a better way to track personnel that's coming in and out of our country that don't necessarily believe or like the way we, you know, they believe what we believe.
Right, and they're willing to do these, for lack of a better word, kamikaze type attacks in America. I mean, this guy knew there was no way he was getting away. He knew that at the end of the day, he was going to get taken out, and probably had planned that if he didn't, he was going to commit suicide. So you get these type of attacks. It's like, where are the systems that, you know, where is the first response, the early alert system?
Well, you know, Cliff, they did, you know, as they do, they started looking at his computer and all this kind of stuff, and they found that he just within like 48 to 72 hours,
yeah,
he did research on martyrdom. So, you know, what does it mean to be a martyr, you know, and that type of thing. So he was already exhibiting characteristics of someone that was planning on doing something drastic, and then, you know, and they said that he had suicidal tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
So he was either going to do this and commit suicide afterwards, or he was going to do it and know that someone was going to take him out. There's no question about that.
Right.
So, Cliff, as far as, you know, some of the things that AJC has been pushing, and we know that there is an answer to the ISIS crisis, and that's one of the things that we talk about here on the program quite a bit, and that is the injustice that occurred to 6 men known as the IRP-6. And the IRP-6 developed a solution that would more than take care of these types of situations. You got the situation in Chattanooga, You also have a situation that happened in San Francisco where a known felon, an illegal immigrant, murdered a young woman out there. And so the software solution called Case Investigative Lifecycle Software, developed by the IRP6, is designed to track this kind of thing. And Cliff, I'll let you talk about the Silk software, but let me just throw the names of the IRP6 to our listeners so that they will keep them in prayer. And we're still, Just Cause is still pushing for their release. That's David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker. And if folks would go out to freetheirp6.org, again, freetheirp6.org, you'll find out all types of information about the injustice that occurred in this case with the gentlemen who have now been wrongly incarcerated for 3 years. But, you know, Cliff, back to the software, the Case Investigative Lifecycle software, the Silk software, what type of capabilities does it have to help our law enforcement agencies at all levels of government to combat this kind of thing, specifically the growing and we haven't used the term lone wolf yet, but you know, Abdulaziz is definitely a lone wolf,
right?
And we've heard time and time again that is the strategy that is being used to implement and execute these acts of terror on the homeland.
Exactly. And I mean, when you look at the Silk software, and then just to give a little bit of background on it, this software was, customized basically for Department of Homeland Security. So they gave IRP Solutions, the company for the IRP6, they gave them requirements saying this is what we need the software to be able to do. Well, these requirements were implemented. And every time they were given, they were implemented again and again and again up to the point where Homeland Security said, okay, what is it going to take for us to go ahead and stand this software up? You guys give us a quote. IRP Solutions gave a quote of $100 million for the module and the framework to be stood up. And 2 weeks later is when the raid happened on IRP6. But when you look at the software and you say, okay, this is software that basically can do link analysis. And what that does is it can analyze links between one person to another, a person to a place, a person to any type of thing, to a weapon, to a vehicle, to a country, and basically show a mapping. You take this shooter in Chattanooga. I don't even want to say his name anymore. You take him and you say, okay, he has this uncle in Jordan. So the software would point to his uncle in Jordan, then it would point to affiliations that his uncle has. It would show to weapons that he has purchased. It would point to charges that he's been brought up under. It would point to vehicles that he has. It would point to his friends. It would point to different family members. When you feed the Silk software information, it analyzes that information to say, hey, here's a red flag. Guess what? This guy is a drug abuser. He owns guns. He has, relations and companies that are hot on the terror list. It pops up a flag to say this is somebody that needs to be looked at immediately. Not after he kills five people, then let's check his background. No, it's proactive, it's preemptive to give you the opportunity, to give law enforcement the opportunity to say, is this someone that we need to look into? And in the situation with the Chattanooga shooter, it absolutely was. That is one of the capabilities of the Silk software, and that is why Department of Homeland Security asked IRP Solutions, hey, we need a quote on what it's going to take to stand this up, because this is something that our nation needs. And like I said before, after that, you get a raid on the company, and as a result, now you have six men, like you said before, Sam, sitting in federal prison for 3 years. For to echo the words of former Attorney General Eric Holder, no good law enforcement, for being in debt.
That's right.
They're sitting in prison. The solution that could help America fight ISIS, that could recognize these sleeper cells, these lone wolves, point them out to law enforcement, the men who have that solution are sitting in federal prison for frivolous charges.
Wow.
And those are That's the type of things that make you look at America and say, what is wrong with our justice system?
And, you know, I heard President Obama when he was doing his tour of the prison of a prison last week and making very similar comments. And And he was commenting to the fact that he has no sympathy for violent criminals and those who are in prison, you know, as a result of acts of violence, but that our system overrunning with people who have been accused of and have been incarcerated as a result of nonviolent convictions.
Exactly.
And that's where something needs to be done. And so and the IRP 6 were wrongly convicted. And how much more nonviolent accusation is there than a financial debt? And we've talked about before that debtor's prison went away a long time ago.
A long time.
And there is absolutely no reason why six men should be sentenced to anywhere from 7 to 11 years.
That's overkill.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. No matter how you look at it.
Yeah, even
overkill.
If they were guilty of the crime that they accused
them
for.
It's excessive.
It's very excessive to say 7 to 11 years for people with no criminal history. Military background. I mean, what was taken into account? The only thing that was taken into account is a conspiracy on the part of Judge Arguello and Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch and Assistant U.S. Attorney Sunitha Hazra to say we have to lock these men up. And Kirsch, even in his own words at one point, said, I gotta get them back in jail. Got to.
Wow.
From the time when they held him after the verdict up until before sentencing. He wanted to get them back in locked up immediately. And it's like, what is the problem?
It
makes you look at the American justice system.
Wow.
And say, you know, if people who didn't commit a crime get treated like this and get this type of sentence, God help the people who committed a petty crime.
Wow.
And they get put in, and it's like, okay. I mean, you look at the people that President Obama basically gave clemency to last week. I mean, these people, you giving life for having a gram of drugs? How does that make any sense?
Doesn't make any sense. They said the average sentence in the United States is a minimum of 3 years. That a minimum. I don't care what you did.
Yeah, that's so, exactly what they're saying. Like, I don't care what you did. You going down for 3 years.
We got to get you at least for three.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you kicked a bottle and it broke in the street, we got to get you for at least 3 years.
That's crazy.
You littered.
That's
we got to get you.
Well, Cliff, before we go to this break, let's run down the names of the fallen servicemen who were shot and killed at the hands of a terrorist here in the United States in Chattanooga. And so let's run down those names again. Again, we honor them, and condolences go out to their families.
Absolutely. We want to call out Marine Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Sullivan of Massachusetts, Lance Corporal Squire K. Wells, better known as Skip, from Georgia, Marine Staff Sergeant David Wyatt of Arkansas, Marine Sergeant Carson Holmquist, and Navy Petty Officer Randall Smith of Ohio. Our hearts go out to your families, and our prayers are with them all, and we appreciate these servicemen for what they have done for our country.
And may God strengthen their family.
Yes, and we also found out this afternoon that President Barack Obama ordered flags at half-staff until sunset on July 25th. So, you know, listeners out there in America, if you have a flag hanging on your front porch or in your front yard, we ask that you would honor these men and move your flags to half staff in honor of these fallen soldiers. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back here in just a moment. Again, a reminder to our listeners, 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. Our chat room is open, so jump in there if you have any questions or comments as well. We're going to have our lines will be open, and as we start talking about comparing the prisons and the prison problems here in the United States when we come back. I'm Sam Thurman along with Cliff Stewart and Dennis Merritt. This is AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I ask you a question? Did you know that there are over 2.4 million people behind bars in the United States? I'll ask you one more question. Were you aware that that is the highest number of people behind bars in the entire world? The United States makes up of only 5% of the world's population, but we have over 25% of the world's prison population. America prides itself on being the most advanced and progressive nation on earth. However, sadly, we are also the world's most archaic. I'm going to give you a personal invitation to get involved with the fight against mass incarceration. Take a few moments to call 1-855-529-4252. That is a Just Cause, and we fight for justice. Again, call a Just Cause today. Don't delay. Call 1-855-529-4252. It is time, and I say high time, that we take America's incarceration seriously. Won't you join us? Call today.
They'll see you before you see them. Cops are cracking down on drinking and driving. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness
are all courtesy of the heroic men and women of the United States military.
They give so much, and they ask so little.
I'm Joe Bontaine.
I'm Jack Scalia.
I'm Nick Searcy.
I'm Bonnie Jo Laughlin.
I'm Scott Elrod. Please help me thank our heroes by doing something.
Donate your time, talent, or gifts
to groups and organizations devoted to our troops and their families.
Visit a veteran's hospital.
A smile, a hug,
a shoulder, a handshake,
or even an attentive ear goes a long, long way.
Quite simply, give.
They'll sincerely appreciate it.
And it just might do wonders for you, too.
Remember, freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free. Get involved.
Give back now.
God bless America.
AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Dennis Merritt. Lisa Stewart and Lamont Banks are off this evening. Our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. And again, we were talking a little bit about the IRP6 and the Silk software before the break, so I just want to put this out there one more time as far as the website. For anyone who might be interested in finding out more about the case investigative lifecycle software and this case of the IRP6, you can go to freetheirp6.org. Again, freetheirp6.org. Or you can go to the AJC website, a-justcause.com. Again, a-justcause.com. And take a look at one of the latest press releases that we put out there. There's additional information, additional contact information out there that you can use in order to get more information about that. The IRP6 are David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker. Our phone number this evening is 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. 76. Cliff, we had one more story here that we were going to touch on very briefly before we moved on and talked about prisons. And that's the story and the wrongful death of Sandra Bland, a young lady from the Chicago area. She was traveling to Texas for a new job and got pulled over, ended up going to jail, And after 3 days of being in jail, they found her hanged in her cell. Now, initially, they tried to say that it was suicide. Her family is pushing back, and they said she didn't have any suicidal tendencies. She had no reason to be. She had her career before her. She was going down there to work at her alma mater, I believe, to do some work. She gets pulled over, and the dash cam shows all kinds of things. And there's one article that says, you know, where the Texas Ranger or the Texas State Patrol, he made a comment that I will light you up, basically making reference to using a taser on her during a traffic stop. Well, now, finally, the district attorney, the Waller County district attorney there in Texas, is saying that this is being treated like a murder investigation, which it should be. Until, you know, if they can find some definitive evidence otherwise, then, you know, let it be. But this county has a very checkered past when it comes to this kind of thing and when it comes to racism. Cliff.
And, you know, the thing that really gets you about this article is, excuse me, when the, you know, when Elton Mathis, the Waller County DA, gets up and says it's being treated like an murder investigation. And he says there's too many questions that still need to be resolved. Not that point. It's very much too early, he says, to make any kind of determination that this was a suicide or a murder because the investigations are not complete. You know this is not a suicide when you look at the second sentence in the article, that the police found her that she had hanged herself with a plastic bag inside the jail cell. Where do you get a plastic bag inside your jail cell that's strong enough to hold an adult body?
That's right.
I mean, what type of plastic bag is that? Now, I can see them saying, well, we took a plastic bag and we held it overhead and strangled her to death. That would be conducive of a plastic bag killing you. But you tied a plastic bag around your neck and hang yourself? How do you accomplish that? I mean, what type of plastic bag or do they have in jail issue? I've never seen one that strong that you say, hey, just tie this around your neck and hang yourself. Do you know what it takes to hang? I mean, how many plastic bags even can you stuff 50 pounds into without it ripping? Try that with your Glad bag at home. It's not working. This is for them even to come up with something like that. So she hanged herself with a plastic bag, but it still could be a suicide, but we're investigating it like a murder. And then the fact that the Texas Rangers and the FBI are investigating this case, as the DA says, oh, well, they all are, you know, looked at, you know, we treat all investigations like a murder. No, I don't think so. Because Texas Rangers and the FBI don't get involved
exactly. Just
because, you know, somebody happened to die in your jail cell. That's not the way it works. That's not how any of this works.
I would definitely like to see the report because I'm sure there's a lot of bruising involved. I'm sure there's a lot of other things that they're going to find out that had nothing to do with strangulation. I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah. And you know, when you look at this kind of thing what her family is pushing, what, for the autopsy report? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the autopsy report, unless someone tries to taint it or... And that's not uncommon. I mean, you know, things disappear.
Exactly.
And it's amazing to me that the things that people get away with in our judicial system. And that's why we need reforms. And, you know... We talk about it all the time. We hear our callers talk about it. Certain guests talk about it. It is certainly and definitely unfortunate that the masses, as far as the law enforcement community and so forth, have to suffer because of, you know, some bad apples in the barrel.
Exactly.
But we cannot ignore the fact that there are some bad apples in the barrel. I mean, they're not all, you know, doing the things according to the book.
Yeah, I'm at the point where I could tell you that this justice system is, to me, so, the word I guess I'm looking for is corrupt, because you can't trust anyone. I mean, even a DNA sample, it's hard for me to believe these days that someone didn't, you know, somehow get a hold of someone's DNA and use it against them. It's just that's how corrupt this system is.
All right. Well, you can get out there online and you can find out more information about the Sandra Bland story. And we're going to follow that one closely as well as the other story that we were talking about earlier. This evening, we're going to be spending quite a bit of time talking about the prisons in the United States and comparing them to other prisons around the world. And, you know, you can't talk about the prisons without talking about the problem of mass incarceration. And it is a major, major issue. So we're going to be talking about that.
You have offered rigorous research and really expert guidance to policymakers at every level of government. And with this conference and the report that you are unveiling today, you're taking yet another step to advance our efforts to address some of our nation's most critical challenges, few of which are more complex or more urgent than the need to strengthen America's criminal justice system and to reduce our over-reliance on incarceration. Now, as you know, we gather this afternoon just over a year after the launch of the Justice Department's Smart on Crime initiative. This was a series of important changes and what I would consider common sense reforms that I set in motion last August. Now, already these changes are fundamentally shifting our response to certain crime challenges, particularly low-level, nonviolent drug offenses. And this initiative is predicated on the notion that our work as prosecutors must be informed and our criminal justice system continually improved by the most effective and efficient strategies that are available. After all, as I've often said, the United States will never be able to prosecute or incarcerate its way to becoming a safer nation.
So that was former Attorney General Eric Holder. And he was making comments in the latter part of last year with regard to mass incarceration and the need for judicial reform. And Cliff, I think you quoted him a little bit earlier in the program when former Attorney General Eric Holder made the comment that, you know, we have far too many people incarcerated for no good law enforcement reason. And, you know, our prisons are just overrunning. And so I want to ask you guys a question. What do you think? What state is the state that you would say holds the title as the incarceration capital of the United States?
I would say New York.
Really? Okay. What do you think, Cliff?
I'd have to throw Texas at the top, and my second would be California.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to read a couple of things here for you.
Don't say it's Delaware.
And I'm going to expand it for you. It's not the incarceration capital of the nation. It's the incarceration capital of the world because it holds the title. Because, you know, it holds the title for the U.S. It's going to be for the world.
Exactly.
Louisiana is the world's prison capital.
Wow.
Louisiana. And it says that the state imprisons more of its people per capita than any of its U.S. counterparts. First among Americans means first among the world. And that was written by Cindy Chang of a Louisiana newspaper a little while back. And it says that the state of Louisiana is often called out for having the highest incarceration rate in the world. But in the global context, you know, you look at, the United States, we already know, is the leader. Around the globe, governments, and this is put out by the Prison Policy Organization, so you can go out to www.prisonpolicy.org, and they have some incredible stats out there, but says that around the globe, governments respond to illegal activity and social unrest in many ways. But here in the United States, back in the 70s, that's when we got on our incarceration rampage, and we start setting unprecedented rates. And for decades, we've just been piling on. And so basically, we look at the U.S. incarceration rates at over 700 people per 100,000 in the population. I'm going to say that again. Over 700 people are incarcerated per 100,000 people. What's our population here in the United States? What, 300 and something million or something like that?
Yep.
We got over 2 million 2.2, 2.3, something like that, million people incarcerated, a little bit more. That's outrageous. I mean, and Dennis, you mentioned at the top of the show that, you know, does it have something to do with money?
I believe that it do. I think it has a lot to do with money. Incarceration, the prison system is big business. I mean, so you got a lot of contractors, small vendors. You got all kinds of people involved, even our government. So I really do believe that a lot of our overcrowding is all about a dollar. And we could easily fix that by, you know, of course, minimizing the, you know, the time of incarceration. And then what we're incarcerating people for.
And you know, Cliff, when you look at the incarceration rate and the prison industrial complex, it is big business. And you know that there are a couple of big companies here, and they have contracts.
They have the sickest contracts that you could ever think of. How do you have a contract with the state? Let's say the state of Louisiana, since they're the you know, the record holder. But there are contracts that say you will have a certain percentage of beds being filled in the prison. How do you say we can guarantee that we're going to have this many criminals without a level of corruption that says we have to be you know, working these numbers? We have to be basically going out and doing something crooked to ensure that we have this many beds filled. Because you can't say we guarantee next summer we're going to have this many people commit crimes. It is senseless, and yet the U.S. government and U.S. governments at a state level are allowed to basically put contracts in place and guarantee these companies that, yes, we will have this many prisoners that will be able to basically manufacture your products, your furniture, your license plates, you know, your tools. We guarantee you we will have this many workers. And
sounds
as we,
like slavery to me.
Well, and we all know. That's the point I was about to make. We all know slavery was abolished in America, except in the prison system. If you're a prisoner, you can be treated like a slave. You can be a slave, actually.
Exactly.
And how do we as a nation, how are we not all as Americans just ashamed and disgusted that as a country, that's what we do? I mean, if you're not fighting against it, if it doesn't bother you, if you just say, hey, well, you know, they all deserve to be there, that is not the case. That makes no sense that everyone in prison deserves to be there. I mean, recent history in the last couple of years have proven that in America, we have had a record number of exonerations. To say that in 2014, that this is a record year for exonerations, that it's great that the people are getting out, but that is a very troubling stat to have. That we found out that we put a record number of people in prison for absolutely no reason, and we're
That's sad.
It's totally sad, and we got to keep fighting to get things changed. Because
and our justice system is not designed to exonerate.
No.
As you can tell, it takes years and years to get somebody out of prison that was wrongfully convicted. But we could put you in prison in less than a year with ease.
Well, that's why they say it takes one person to put you in prison, being a judge, and it takes an army to get you out. Because once you get into the system, innocent or not, it is a fight, a grind, just everything that you have to say, okay, you have the right to be released. But I mean, look at all the stories that we read of the people who a judge has said he has committed no crime, you need to release him. But a U.S. attorney or a district attorney or a state attorney says, no, we're going to try him again because, hey, we feel like he did it. Well, the evidence has prompted a judge to say, this man committed no crime, let him out. But another man says, no, I'm not letting him out. He's under my jurisdiction. That's when, you know, and I'm not telling the people of any place to, you know, come to arms and start a civil war. But that's when the public needs to take it upon itself to say, we will protest until you let an innocent man out. This man deserves to be out. Exactly. Let him out. But we have so many situations like that here in America. And, you know, you look at other countries, not only are their incarceration rates much lower, but they have an avenue to basically, you know, rehabilitate their prisoners. Their prisons are put in place to say, we are here to help you as a nation because, you know, you're our people.
Exactly.
And America is like, no, we're here to keep you there as long as we can because every day you stay in is another $100 that we
And then they treat the prisoners humanely.
Yes.
They don't treat them less than our pets. Not that we don't love our pets, but prisoners in the United States of America is treated like animals. They don't deserve anything good. You know, I don't care. We don't want to feed them anything good, anything nutritious. Forget about health care. Forget about, you know, their housing. It doesn't matter. It's all about you committed a crime, and we're going to make you pay for it as long as we can make you pay for it. So there is nothing in place as far as rehabilitation. And like in Germany, they make it mandatory that, you know, you learn a skill. They could care less whether you learn a skill or not. And that's why we got these prisoners. They get out and they come back. And they continue to get out, come back. So it's just over and over again. And that's why that prison population is never really decreasing but increasing.
Well, you know, let's take a look at one thing that, you know, they do comparisons. And, you know, one thing that's really alarming is the fact that over the last few years, the crime rate in the United States has actually been going down, while the prison while the incarceration rate has been going up. Now, if you look at what's going on in Germany and the Netherlands, they're having a similar phenomenon as far as it can't be similar in the sense of it, because they're getting different results.
Right.
Their crime is going down, and they are taking, you know, drastic measures, deliberate steps to reduce their incarceration rates. They are actually closing prisons.
Right, right.
When's the last time you heard of a prison closing here? I mean, they're trying.
Oh, they're trying to build prisons.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a few that's around that don't have anybody in them, but they are definitely trying to do things to open them up until the communities around those areas start fighting and say, no, we don't want a prison right down the street from us. But, for instance, okay, the prison numbers in Germany and the Netherlands, they have declined since 2001, and these are according to the statistics compiled by the International Center for Prison Studies. The number of inmates in German prisons reached an all-time high of 80,000 in 2001. 80,000.
That's an all-time
high. 80,000.
We can't even get that as an all-time low.
I mean, that might be one state, you know. if you did all of the federal as well as state and local and all that somewhere here in the United States. And then it fell 20% to 64,000 in 2012. The prison population in the Netherlands spiked in 2004. Hold on to your seats now. To 20,000. It spiked in 2004 to 20,000 inmates. That number fell by about 36% to 13,000 in 2012. In the maximum security prison at Florence, Colorado, there are what, 1,200 there? Just in one, that's just at, and Florence has four institutions,
right,
on that one compound. The maximum security by itself has 1,200. If we were to look up the number for all the total population in Florence, I'm sure we'd get really, you know, probably about 25% of this number right here.
Yeah, no,
that's
doubt.
There's that one facility. And so it says that the officials in Sweden have closed four prisons. This was in 2013. They closed four prisons after a 6% drop in prison populations from 2011 to 2012. So, you know, as we compare and look at how other nations are handling the situation, our picture, like we said before, is bleak. And like you said, I think you mentioned this earlier in the program, Dennis, is that more than 90% of the Dutch sentences and 75% of German sentences are 12 months or less. And the average U.S. state prison sentence, and this is just talking about state prison, is about 3 years.
And that's because, you know, the way I want to read this little excerpt, it says that by assessing fines or community services for less serious offenses instead of incarceration, changing the disciplinary structure in prison to less severe punishment by using solitary confinement sparingly, treating young offenders as a special population and normalizing conditions in prison to ensure a smooth return to society. There's a system in place in these other countries where we're trying to get you through the system back into society and that you would be a help. But in our system, it's about keeping you in the prison. They could care less about how you react to society, because if you mess up again, guess what? We're putting you back in prison.
So, you know, as we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the how they treat prisoners in the United States as compared to some of the other prisons. You know,
what a difference.
Some folks, they want to, you know, throw stones at folks like the Netherlands and say, hey, you know, it's like a luxury hotel that, you know, you can't treat prisoners like that. But they are having much more success as well with the recidivism rate.
Exactly.
And so it's one of those things. I think, you know, we've heard that if you treat someone like an animal, then guess what? And I think, Cliff, you've used that analogy
before. Oh, that's
before,
so true. That's so true.
Where you bag somebody in a corner and you continually back them in a corner and threaten them and dare them to come out of that corner. When they decide to come out of that corner, guess what? They're going to come out fighting.
That's exactly right. You can turn a squirrel into an attacking beast. Keep mistreating it, and you'll see.
And squirrels can fly. I mean, they'll be all over you. This evening, we're talking about prisons and the problems here in the United States, comparing the U.S. prisons to that of other nations. And like we said before, you can't talk about that without talking about the problem of mass incarceration, because we as a nation have been going in the wrong direction for a long time. And we do know that President Obama is really, really working hard on his initiative as far as clemency is concerned. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we're pushing for the IRP6. And the IRP6 being David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker, because as we stated before, these men, and we'll share some information that we know as far as some things that happens in prisons, and we have to talk about the food, we have to talk about the accommodation, so to speak, as far as you know what you sleep on.
Exactly.
And how you sleep, the medical care. There are just so many things where we are lacking, and people have a tendency to turn their head the other way. Well, we're going to be talking about that when we come back from this break. Our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. If you have a personal story to share, or you know of a story that you'd like to share, or even if you have a question, we welcome your call with your questions or your comments. Also, our chat room is open. This is AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Convicted six executives and held back evidence.
Come on.
Hundreds of pages of Mr. Manuscript. Court circuit, 10th district denying the writ of mandamus. Free the RP6, critical rights violations, scandalous. Their motivation to finish, they finish with major companies, the government, New York PD, DHS, potential customers.
Come on.
Faith attempt to obtain funding from banks and angel investors with no success. That calm melt down, finance skeptics, so they hire a staff and come to fill the gap with every attention to fulfill the contract. Pay the deal when money come back. Everybody paid the bills, the wages, take care of all of that. No Friday. They got viable software, but you compare them to those with nothing to offer. Prosecuted by the attorney's office before the FBI got to start investigating charges, skipping steps in the process, even barring the testimony of Andrew Averell. A witness who could tell why any staffing company that could do a dumb rash street credit check would stick out their neck if there was no prospect they could collect. When they're reeling the net, it all relates to Harvey Silver Glade statements about the vagueness of federal law, judicial chaos, A_justcause. Read at RP6.org, 347-205-9620, just blog. It's just us, but we don't gotta just talk. We can just walk through the
one voice is just for you all. Come on.
AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. Cliff, Dennis, we got a good one going here, talking about the prisons in the United States and comparing them to other nations. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Dennis Merritt. Lisa Stewart and Lamont Banks are off this evening. Our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. Cliff, I understand that you just got an interesting question in the chat room regarding the prison industrial complex, and in reference to whether or not we had done a previous show talking about this, and this will really show a major picture as to how the prison industrial complex continues to drive the prison population and the prison problem. So, you know, as far as that that question is concerned, we're looking up that information. We're going to get that posted in the chat room as far as a link to that previous show. But in the meantime, let's pull up some information about two of the biggest providers of a prison, private prison services here in the United States. One of them is Corrections Corporation of America. And the other is the GEO Group. And Cliff, I mean, these guys are generating some staggering numbers.
No, I mean, it is insane. And one of the things, you know, I'm looking at this this article, the one that we posted in the chat room and that Sam is referencing. One of the things that really gets you is that, this is talking about Louisiana. And they said they did a 8-part series, and this was from 2012, so it's a little dated, but trust me, those two companies are still racking in billions of dollars. But it said that the New Orleans Times, I don't know how to say that, Picayune, chronicled how more than half of Louisiana's 40,000 inmates are housed in prisons that are run by, get this, sheriffs.
Wow.
Or private companies as part of a broader financial incentive scheme. The detention business goes beyond just criminal prisoners. And when you look at the fact that in America, it's called the prison industrial complex, because that's what it is, an industry. It's hey, this is how we get cheap labor that we don't have to send offshore. We can say, hey, all these products are made in America. They're made by American workers, basically made by slaves behind a prison wall. But in America, that is what prison is about. It's about how many dollars can be made off of each head that is in a bunk. In other countries, like Dennis was saying earlier, it's about rehabilitation. You look at what even like in Germany, what they call their facilities. They call it the preventative detention unit in Germany. Now you look at those words, you say, okay, this is a prison, a penitentiary. This is the Federal Bureau of Prisons, a United States prison complex. In other countries, they say, okay, let's let you know what it's about. It's a preventative detention unit. And they say all of the prisoners in German preventative detention are required to participate in individualized therapy programs. And get this, every year, a group of psychologists and officials decide whether the prisoner can be released safely. It's not like, okay, in 10 years you get to go out on parole and then wait another 10 years and we'll see how bitter you are at the system when you come before us then and see if we're going to let you out and quit making profit on you. No, they say each year a group of psychologists and officials, they decide on everybody that's in there to say, hey, is he ready to go back to society? Has he been rehabilitated? And they say they also decide regularly whether the prisoner can visit family on the outside, a dynamic that is practically impossible to imagine in the U.S. And they're talking about this one prisoner. They said he's allowed to visit his daughter. He's allowed to visit his baby granddaughter. And when you look at that, those are the type of incentives that say, hey, I'm going to be a model prisoner. I'm not going to get in more trouble because if I do what's right, there's an incentive for me to do what's right. Not if I'm a model prisoner, you're still going to treat me like I'm some type of psychopath.
Exactly.
If I'm doing everything you asked me to do, but you want to lock me up in solitary confinement because I didn't take a pill that you want me to take. Because I said, hey, I don't want to eat this rotted bologna that you're feeding me for dinner. You want to put me in solitary confinement rather than saying, hey, your incentive for doing what's right, we're going to treat you right first off, but then your incentive for doing what's right is going to be, hey, we're going to let you go out and see your family this weekend. We're going to give you an actual incentive. And like this article says, that's unheard of in America.
It's not going to happen. And then what gets me too is, you know, you put them in solitary confinement, and you do all these different things to them where you make it very difficult to live, you know, and then you expect them to get out and just be a model citizen. I don't get that. You treat it me like dirt for 10 to 15 years, and then when you release me, I'm supposed to be this great guy. I'm not going to do anything else. I don't think America gets it. I mean, it's just the opposite. I understand we have to pay the penalty for our actions, but how long do we have to pay the penalty?
Well, you know, in Germany and the Netherlands, the prosecutors there use diversion options a lot more extensively than the United States. I mean, if there's a way for someone to pay a fine, and whether it's paid over time or they can have home confinement or supervised release, they use those types of options more than incarceration. I mean, when you look at these compared side by side in Germany, the Netherlands, and the United States, the incarceration in Germany, according to this report that was done by the Vera Institute, incarceration in Germany is used 6% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Cases that come before courts in Germany, 6%. The Netherlands, 10%. The United States, take a swag at it, Dennis.
50%, 60%.
How about it, Cliff?
I'd say 99.9%.
Okay, let's split the difference. 70%. 70%, according to the Vera Institute, are incarcerated. Now, and then when we look at suspended prison sentences, it's totally suspended. The Netherlands, 10%. Germany, I want to say Netherlands regardless. Germany, 15%. According to this study, very, very, it didn't even make the chart for the United States.
Wow.
I mean, when you look at them comparatively, It didn't even make the chart. And then when you look at probation and community sanctions, the United States ranks at 37%, the Netherlands 23%, and Germany, because of the fact that they use – oh, and there's another category. That's why some of these don't even – like probation and community sanctions don't even rank in Germany because 79% of those charged are paying a fine. They're not housing people like animals and making society worse, like you were just making reference to, Dennis. They are, you know, you commit a crime, you pay a fine, or, you know, your sentence is suspended, or, you know, if it's bad enough, you're 6 out of 100 people, 6% that's going to go to prison. Yeah, and then as far as the Netherlands is concerned, 56 of those pay fines, and then in the United States we only use 21% to pay fines. I mean, so, you know.
Well, that's because they got to have somebody in that bed that the next morning they can stamp out that metal, you know, wrench, that tool. They got to be able to carve out and assemble that furniture. It's all about the dollar bill. And, you know, I'm looking at this article again on this, you know, basically the article is entitled, "Can German Prisons Teach America How to Handle Its Most Violent Criminals?" And, I mean, this is talking about the most violent offenders in Germany. And one of the profound things that, you know, their program director, the head of their program, says is that we have to give them more freedom, which is totally 180 degrees on America. America says lock them up, lock them down, put them in a box that's 3x6 and keep them there. And their program, she said, we have to give them more freedom. They're only being held to protect the public, she added, not to punish them. What? could it ever come into the mind of prison
it's
officials?
It's all about the punishment.
Yeah, in America, it's like, oh, no, they're not here. they're here to be punished. It's not to protect people. It's not to rehabilitate them. It's all about punishment. I mean, this is, you read this and you're like, wow, it's, they're only being held here to protect the public, not to punish them. And they said I mean, this leaves you speechless, because what does America have to say, you know, basically to rebut what these other countries are saying? And like they say here, the recidivism rate is so much lower than America.
They're not going back to prison.
You take your most violent criminals, you give them a place. I mean, they said, you know, they have this sunny, spacious building. It says that the conditions for these men in preventive detention are better than those. So they give the most violent prisoners have. They've learned that if you give them a better condition in prison and give them the opportunity to be rehabilitated, that they do just that. They get rehabilitated. America needs to take a lesson from this. This is crazy. I mean, in America, we say you get 1 hour of sunshine a day. These men are allowed to roam the grounds of their unit freely from 6 in the morning until 9:30 at night. They even have a bright blue basketball court. I mean, they say in the one man said his room was decked out with teddy bears for when his granddaughter visits. vague Gothic art on the walls and a massive window looking out into a grove of trees. Upstairs, there's a large exercise room, a music room full of electric guitars and drums, and a workshop where this one prisoner, where he fixes bicycles.
Exactly.
He feeds and cares for the two cats who slink around the premises. And, I mean, this is rehabilitating this man, letting him know that, hey, we've separated you from society to help you, not as a punishment.
Right.
Not to say you're so bad that you are not human, but so that we can help you, so we can bring you back into the fold, so that one day, when you go back into society, that whatever is wrong with you that caused you to commit these horrendous crimes, let's figure it out together,
as a country, as countrymen, as brothers, to say, we can help you. And that is all that every human is looking for. I need some companionship, someone with compassion that understands that if there's something wrong with my mind, that you get that. Not, there's something wrong with your mind, put you in a cage and beat you like an animal at a sideshow circus until you conform, which will never happen because there's something wrong.
And it's actually working.
That's what's crazy. You read this and it's like, it's
the
working.
The prison population is dropping.
It's dropping, and these men are going back into society. They're becoming viable members of society and not repeating the crime that they had done before. This is amazing, and if America does not, you know, take this and say, look, we need to apply something like this, which, you know, they're not, because America's prisons are about keeping people locked up for, like you said, Dennis, earlier, for profit.
Exactly.
It's sickening, it's shameful, and it needs to be exposed so that we don't have people locked up, like Eric Holder said, for no good law enforcement reason. You just got them locked in there. Hey, you're a slave. You're gonna build, and you're going to work for us and make me profit. That's all it's about.
Well, Cliff, let's take a look at the quality of the corrections officers in the United States compared to that of, let's say, Germany. Now, I think in Germany, they actually have some stiff competition, I mean, and some stiff requirements. They might have, at one prison, I'm looking at one article here, it says that they will have roughly 300 men and women who will apply for a position at a prison where they only have 30 openings. And then the person or persons, they have to score at least 100 on an IQ test. And if they're accepted, these trainees will study. They're going to study for at least 2 years before they're actually put into rotation. And so, and the way that they are dealing with the prison population is totally different. I mean, they look at the fact that, and again, we're looking at the fact that the prison population in places like Germany is significantly less than that in the United States. Now, let's take a look at the qualifications of a Federal Bureau of Prisons corrections officer.
You have to make it to the third grade.
At least.
You have to successfully complete a full 4-year course of study leading to maybe a bachelor's degree at an accredited college or university. It says leading to, or at least 3 years of full-time general experience, one of which is equivalent to a GL-4 pay grade. And I don't know what a GL-4 pay grade is in the government service, but Dennis, do you have an idea of what that kind of...
I am not familiar with GL. I know of GS.
What's the GS for?
GS is general schedule. And then you have WG, which is wage grade, but I've never heard of that one.
So let's say if it was at the GS-4 or WG-4, do you have an idea what that pay level is like?
That's about between 20,000 and 30,000, about 28,000.
So it's entry level.
Yeah, entry
level pay.
Right.
And then it says ability to meet and deal with people of differing backgrounds and behavioral patterns. Now, it doesn't talk about any kind of specific training or any kind of
how do you determine that?
Exactly. Ability to be persuasive and selling and influencing ideas. I think you can persuade anybody if you got a nightstick. I mean, we're not talking about hiring salesmen here.
Exactly.
I mean, some of the terminology that they're using here, ability to lead, supervise, and instruct others. Now, this one really gets me, Cliff. Sympathetic attitude towards the welfare of others. Where does that fall in?
That doesn't fall in anywhere. I don't even know how they even put that. I don't know how they posted that anywhere, because you ask any of them about their sympathy toward others when they're saying these men are animals and you got to treat them as such. Where's the sympathy there? And when you compare that to to the to other prisons. You know, like in this article that's talking about the competition to work in German prisons. They said that, you know, they basically, in their 2-year training, they're taught to communicate with the inmates. And they're taught, they don't call them offender, they don't call them inmate, they call them Mr. and Mrs. And they said one of the main things that they're taught to do
is
respect. They say they take them and they say, okay, you're going to be the corrections officer that transports them to court, and then you're going to bring them back. And they are taught that when they come from the courthouse and you get them back in the van to talk to them, you want to converse to them about what just happened in your situation. Talk to me about what's going on. Tell me, well, how do you feel about the sentence that you got? You know, if it was too excessive, talk to them and keep them encouraged. Tell them how, you know, you're going to ensure that they have communication with their family, that you're going to make sure that the time they spend there, that you're going to be there to help them. So you get a personal relationship from the law enforcement officers that gives the inmate a sense of, okay, somebody still cares and somebody still sees me as a human instead of just an inmate.
Not in our prison system.
Not in our prison.
No way.
You get a number.
Oh yeah.
That's what they call you by. That is what you're referenced by. All of your casework. You all are wearing the exact same thing. Your cells looking the exact same way, except for some slight differences. They want you to be basically, hey, you're a robot. You're here to do what we say, and that's it. There is no personal interaction. I mean, when you say that you as a correction officer, you're here to encourage this person and make them understand that they need to look at it from a different perspective. You need to – I mean, they're saying you need to – that the corrections officer is telling this man, you got to look at it different, that the time that you spend here is to better yourself. And they said that the impetus of their training is communicate, communicate, communicate.
Right.
And what one of the German prison officials, he said, if you stop communicating, things get dangerous.
Exactly.
Because you let all this stuff build up. You let this person feel like, you know, nobody hears me. No one wants to hear me. No one feels what I'm going through. That's where the breakdown is. And they took a bunch of American officials, you know, to Germany and let them see this. And they said, you know, the Vera Institute of Justice, they were the one who took them to Germany. And they said a lot of them got some powerful lessons from this this trip to Germany. One of the officials said, I came back and said, I want everyone to have an IQ of 100. That was John Wetzel, the corrections secretary of Pennsylvania. When we took a step back and thought, what can we replicate? It was a focus on communication skills. So we're developing a more intensive communication curriculum. Yeah, but it's still the...
We need to see it.
We need to see it.
I need to see it.
Because just like we say on here on AJC Radio all the time, the culture has to be... change. You can't say, well, we want to communicate more. Me as a prison official, I say that, but then you go to my prison, and that's the last thing. All you got is a guard walking around with a baton running against the bars of the cell to drive people crazy, basically telling you, I'm here, I got a big stick, and if you get out of line, I'm going to hit you with it.
And we need to make sure our prison systems are more transparent.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Because this out of sight, out of mind thing, we hide our prison systems.
Yep.
From our from the communities, and so nobody knows what's going on. There's got to be more transparency when it comes to our prison system.
And Cliff, that point about communications, how can they expect corrections officers in the U.S. prison system to be respectful to the inmates and to the prison population when they can't even be respectful to the families
exactly.
and the children
wow.
and the friends of inmates? Now, you know, a personal story that
personal.
We know regarding the IRP-6. Some of the corrections officers at the Florence Prison Federal Corrections Camp have been so disrespectful.
Camp.
I got to
reiterate.
Which is supposed
that.
To be the lowest
the
tier
lowest.
Of incarceration in the United States. And these corrections officers have at times disrespected the children of
exactly.
the IRP-6. How can you go up to the daughter of one of the IRP six.
And actually put your hands.
And put your hands on
now,
them.
Now, that's a little bit, that's going too far.
That's like trying to really provoke the inmate to doing something.
Exactly. Right.
And in this case, I mean, when you look at one of the IRP six, you got, you know, men who are very respectful, men who have not caused any problems,
men who are
at
innocent,
men who held positions in their communities and did various things in support of their communities, outreach activities and so forth. They're not there to make trouble for anyone. And
not
so for a corrections officer to take these type of tactics and to use and basically single them out.
Exactly.
Because they will single out the IRP 6 for some things that they will not even touch with someone else that's there. We're going to talk more about the prison situation in the United States and comparing it to other nations when we come back from this break. I'm Sam Thurman along with Cliff Stewart. And I want to give a shout-out to Lisa Stewart and Lamont Banks, and Dennis Merritt is joining us, holding down the seat over here. And we appreciate it, Dennis. Our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. Getting some good questions in the chat room. Keep them coming. If you have any questions or comments that you want to dial in and join in on the conversation, please feel free to do so. This is AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Do you know anyone who's been sent to prison who's innocent? The United States is experiencing record numbers of exonerations in cases where people were wrongfully convicted of crimes they did not commit. If you believe that no one should be sent to prison for crimes they didn't commit, there is something that you can do today. By remembering a just cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call a just cause at 855-529-4252 or visit a-justcause.com and click the donate button. A just cause is a 501c3. Wrongful convictions are wrong. Let's be the voice of those who can't speak from behind the wall.
I was 18 and sold drugs for money. Didn't want to live on that high. Ran away with drugs in my pocket. Open cops. No place to go. All I wanted to do was deal drugs, collect that money, and burn. I had no hope for nothing at all. Didn't care for anything or anyone. After doing some time, I was ordered to do probation.
Incarceration. We spend over $80 billion a year incarcerating people. Alternatives to prison, like community service, drug treatment, and rehabilitation, costs less and can turn lives around. It's time for fair justice. It's time.
criminals off the street, lock them up, and throw away the key. U.S. politicians have capitalized on anti-crime slogans like these for decades. Today, America locks up more people than any other country in the world. Some inmates are held in isolation units that human rights groups call cruel and inhumane. And in a time of severe fiscal pressure, the U.S. spends $80 billion a year to keep 2 million prisoners behind bars. Amid these human and financial costs, new attitudes towards crime and punishment are showing up across the country this election season.
A message from California district attorneys.
One of the clearest signs that Americans are rethinking tough-on-crime policies is Proposition 36, a voters initiative in California this November that would reform the state's hotly debated three-strikes law. The law allows life sentences for repeat offenders regardless of the severity of their crimes.
I was working for a judge, and I began to learn how many people, hundreds, thousands of people who've been sentenced to life for extraordinarily minor crimes.
Michael Romano, a lecturer at Stanford University Law School, helped write the reform initiative.
The United States has a mass incarceration problem. There are more black people in prison in the United States today than were enslaved at the height of slavery.
Since 2006, Romano has worked with a team of law students at Stanford to help people locked up under the three strikes law, gathering additional evidence and filing petitions for resentencing hearings.
I think some attitudes about three strikes have changed over time, and some prosecutors actually ended up joining our petitions and agreeing to the release of some of our clients. So that was really what helped get some momentum starting and get some success in some of our cases.
One of those cases was Norman Williams, a man whose first two convictions were for burglarizing an empty home and stealing an armload of tools from an art studio. His third strike, petty theft.
When I was out there, I was homeless. I didn't have no structure. And I was doing drugs and things like that.
He was convicted of stealing a car jack from the back of a pickup truck and sentenced to life for that crime. I think he would be the first to tell you that he actually committed those crimes, but that a life sentence for petty theft is really pretty excessive. And he ended up doing 13 years for that, which is longer than people do for rape. And he was even sentenced longer than people get for murders.
Romano and his students were able to persuade a judge to cut Williams' sentence, and he's been free since 2009. Since his release, Williams does janitorial work as part of a program for ex-offenders.
To get up every morning and come down here and do this stuff right here, it's good. And this is what I like about it. It really helps me. I help others, and I also help myself.
Proposition 36 would help other non-violent felons serving life sentences get out of prison faster. The ballot measure would also block prosecutors from charging suspects with a third strike if the crime is minor and they have no history of violence.
AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Dennis Merritt. Our phone number is 347-838-8976. This evening, America, we're talking about the problem of prisons in the United States and comparing our prisons to that of prisons in other countries. And we've talked about various aspects of it, and as we stated before, you can't really talk about it without talking about mass incarceration and how we are the leader in the world when it comes to incarceration. What, we have 5% of the world population, but over 20-25%, somewhere in that neighborhood, of the world's prison population. So we account for a quarter of the world's prison population when we only make up 5% of the world's total population. Now, Cliff, if we were to look at what a meal constitutes in prison here in the United States, what type of things would we be looking at?
Rotten green bologna. I mean, we have heard stories of them saying you get a Twinkie for breakfast, and what was it? It was a Twinkie for breakfast and chicken nuggets for lunch. I mean, you're talking about, this is not stuff that you can feed to a kindergarten and expect for them to be nutritionally fit. But you're talking about grown men. And another thing about the meal, even when they do give them a meal, what I don't understand is it's not like everybody is the same size and the same weight and has the same physical build in prison that they could take these cookie-cutter meals and say, I gave you 3 chicken nuggets and a spoonful of mashed potatoes and some bottom pieces off of basically the husk of some lettuce, and that's a meal. Well, if I weigh 240 and you weigh 150, it's going to take a few more calories to sustain me throughout the day than it does you. I mean, you see some of the people in prison, some of those are big guys.
Oh, no doubt.
And you give them all the same meal and say, well, if you weigh 150 or 250, this is the meal that you get. That should be that is criminal constitution of forced starvation.
But there's what gets me is there is money.
Oh,
I mean, there is billions going into the prison system, supposedly for the care of the inmates, right? The food, the bedding, the help. All that supposedly, you know, that's where all the money's going. Like in the clip earlier that everybody was listening to, it said $80 million a year to keep 2 million inmates in prison. $80 million a
while
year.
We have homeless people, you know, all over the place, that we could definitely divert a lot of those funds to solve the other issues that are in this country.
Exactly.
Now what about the issue of food not fit for human consumption? What about that? I mean, have we heard stories of that before? Go ahead, Cliff.
I mean, when you look at it, and we've heard it time and time again, that the inmates, those who are in the kitchen, who are in the warehouse, who bring in the food, who open the boxes of food that are prepared for the inmates, that they say, okay, this is food that it has a label on, not fit for human consumption.
Already expired.
Already expired.
Yep.
For, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. Things that they buy from, basically, if they buy food from restaurants that they've had French fries or something to that effect in their freezer so long, it's like, oh, this expired 2 years ago. Instead of throwing it away, you sell it to the Bureau of Prisons for bulk, and they buy it with an expired stamp on. They say, well, this was expired in 2009. We'll bring it in, and we'll feed it to the men who are in our care.
Now, and if people think we're lying about this, I mean, you can go out and check us on some of this stuff. There was an actual case. I mean, what we're talking about are actual cases, but there's a case that was so out there that they couldn't cover it up. And this meatpacking company ended up having to pay a fine for this. Now, check this out. In the state of Texas, a meat manufacturer accidentally, and I'm emphasizing that word because I don't believe a word of it, they accidentally mislabeled meat products that was intended for pets, and I'm going to emphasize that too.
How do you do that?
They mislabeled it, and I'm trying to be sarcastic
here.
Right,
because there's no way.
And sent it to a federal prison.
Wow.
They didn't mislabel anything.
They just got caught.
And how are you, first off, the fact that you're a food manufacturer, how about a food preparer? You manufacture food, so you're making stuff.
Yeah,
and who knows what type of filler is in it, rat, cockroach.
And when you're making it, you know where it's going. You know what it's intended for, right?
Exactly.
So this meatpacking company, they ended up having to settle. They paid a $400,000 fine to the Department of Agriculture, the USDA, as a result of an investigation into mislabeled meat that was intended for pet food, but instead was sold to the Federal Bureau of Prisons and served to prisoners. Now, the BOP, they followed that up very quickly and said, oh, there's no evidence that this food was served to prisoners.
Right.
And we know that that exactly. is an outright lie.
So if they know it, so if there's no evidence, what is their evidence of that? It was put on the plate and put in their cells to give to them. It just, we don't have evidence because we didn't do no DNA sampling before we watched them swallow it.
Wow.
And this, you know, they put these articles out. They always try to cover, you know, cover up everything. To say, oh, no, we didn't know. We didn't know. You did know.
Exactly.
And you knew when you manufactured that stuff. I mean, when you look at some of these so-called food manufacturing places that are supposed to be just regular grocery store food, and they say, well, a certain amount of rat, roach feces, and all this other stuff.
And that's approved
can,
by the...
Right. It can be approved by the yep. FDA. Yep. The food that we consume on a daily basis. Yeah. Raw chicken, freshly made, can have, you know, 1% rat, 2% cat
right,
hair.
Right, right.
All this crazy stuff. But then you want us to believe that what you're feeding the prisoners in America, people who really are looked down upon and not really cared about, you want to tell us that you accidentally... label something, you know, not for human consumption when it was made as dog food.
And you know what's sad too is that these companies, these American companies, know what they're providing to these prison systems. And I don't know, that would be very difficult for me to provide something that shouldn't be consumed by humans to the prison system when I know,
those are humans
well, will be consuming it. But yet it's all of, here we go. We go back to what? The dollar.
That's what it all boils down to.
Now let's take a look at a prison in Norway. And it's about 75 clicks off the coast of Oslo in Norway. And they say they house about 115 inmates there. And you know, I love seafood, and if you look at this picture, you know, they're out there in the middle of, it's basically an island, and some of the information that our research team has found is like a holiday version of Alcatraz. They have a picture of a guy sitting on a beach lounger soaking up the sun. Their meals can consist of anything from fish balls with white sauce and shrimp to chicken con carne to salmon.
Wow. Yeah, I need to go there for dinner.
I'm serious.
I mean, and this guy doesn't look like he's starving. I mean, when you look at this photo, and now, like you've talked about before, as far as the rehabilitation and preparing someone for reindoctrination into society and not belittling them, not making them feel less than human. I'm not saying that every prison is going to have a five-star menu.
Right.
But at the same time, you can't be feeding people child's portions, and when I say child's portions in elementary
right,
school,
right.
and expect them to be healthy. I mean, that's not going to happen. And then, you know, I was talking to someone over the weekend. They said, you know, sometimes the food that's served in the prison can basically fit in the palm of your hand.
Wow.
And that is your entire meal. And don't let it be a holiday. You know, you may get, like you said, Cliff, you know, the green bologna, and it depends on what the holiday is.
And then there's no nutritional value. It's not like there's a menu, you know, there that can be considered healthy.
Well, they are protein starved.
Oh, no doubt.
And I've heard
a lot of carbs.
I've heard a lot of stories about the theory behind that is, you know, that they don't want to provide the prison population with protein because, you know, that's the thing that's going to beef you up. That's the thing that's
right.
going to give you. So you take away the protein. You take away the, you know,
really?
In certain prisons, you take away their exercise
right.
gear.
Because the guards are too lazy to work out themselves to be able to challenge the prisoners. So they say, well, if we don't give them protein, they can't get all big and buff.
Wow.
And
what
so,
a philosophy.
But that is, you know, you are depriving a human being of
the essentials.
The essentials to
exactly.
sustain life. And like you said, Dennis, it is like, how do you do that to another person? How do you say, I, as one of these corporations that is manufacturing food
wow.
or knowing that that, you know, we're basically using them for slave labor. You know, you got to say like Nathaniel Hawkeye in The Last of the Mohicans, that they've been infected with the sickness of greed.
That's it.
And they would become what twisted them.
Wow.
That's all it's about, is just the dollar bill. That's it.
And in the absence of our colleague, Lamont Banks.
Look what he's paying for.
I mean, and for our listeners who may not know Lamont's story, Lamont was wrongfully convicted, wrongfully incarcerated for 7 years. And he has now been exonerated. The case has been totally overturned. But what he had to suffer physically,
he's still dealing with
wise,
yeah.
It's all attributed to the conditions within the state prison system in the state of Colorado.
Exactly.
Yeah.
His diet led to him having diabetes. And so he suffers with that every day.
And then his sleeping arrangement led to
his back
a
is
bad,
totally,
yeah,
totally jacked up. I mean,
amazing.
When you look at what something that constitutes a mattress, I guess they would try and call it a mattress, you know, what, 2.5-3 inches thick?
If that.
On concrete, and you expect it to sleep on that night after night after night. That is not a healthy choice.
Yeah. And look at the recent exoneration. You've got guys that were on death row that served, you know, 30-plus years, and then they get out, and they're having heart attacks.
How many of them are dying,
you know,
like
dying
within a month or two,
you know,
of getting out?
You it's throw like this money at them, but you know they're not going to get the money because
right, it's like they're letting them out, like,
yeah.
Hey, well, you're about to die, so
anyway,
we better go ahead and let you loose so we don't have to deal with the investigation of why you died in prison.
Wow.
So we'll let you loose, and a year later, it's over. It's really, really a sickening situation. And, you know, like I said, as Americans, we should be ashamed of the way that the prison system is, because what baffles me is that people don't look at prisoners as people.
No.
They just say, well, he's an inmate. He's a criminal. He's this or that. Sure, there are people. No, everybody has done something wrong in their life. Some of us
exactly.
got caught.
And
some of
didn't.
Us did not get caught.
And
that's
then
always,
there's that other yep. category of those
who did nothing wrong and are caught up in the system anyway. But it's like, okay, why treat them less than a human, especially in a system where you say, well, this is the system that's supposed to rehabilitate them. And you see, and we look at other countries as we are tonight, and you see that it works. When you really yep. try to rehabilitate, it works.
But
America refuses to rehabilitate its citizens.
And it's sad, too, because it's all about until it happens to me, which is so sad. If you talk to anybody that has someone that has been incarcerated, whether it was, you know, whether they were guilty or whether they were wrongfully convicted, they can sympathize with the fact that, wow, our justice system, our prison system is broke. But you talk to somebody that does not have somebody that has ever been in prison or know any doesn't know nothing about wrongful conviction, they really don't care. It's not in my yard. It's not none of my family members are affected. So it's, hey, they deserve what they get. And it's sad that it takes for something to happen in somebody's life where it's their family members, it's their loved ones, for the American people to finally realize we have a problem with our justice system, not only when it comes to justice for all, but when it comes to our prison system and how we treat our population, our prison population.
You know, I'd be, and talking about how we treat our prison population and out of sight, out of mind, I know we don't have time to dive into this tonight, but, you know, as you guys were talking, I just started thinking, and I'm using Florence as a reference point, just look at how or where
exactly.
our prisons are.
They hide them.
Yeah. I mean, it's out there in the, for all practical purposes, the desert. It's way away from everything except for the little small town of Florence and Canyon City that's right there, which the industry in Florence and in Canyon City
right.
are basically prisons.
Exactly.
Everyone that lives there either works in the prison or knows someone that works in the prison, or they're looking forward to working at the prison. But it's way out there. I mean, it's not like a destination point for someone to build a luxury home. That's not right. That's not happening. And so, like you said, Dennis, is a very valid point that we hide our facilities. We hide what we're doing, and then unfortunately, the folks who are part of the prison industrial complex, they're getting paid.
Oh yeah, no transparency.
They're getting paid, but then the rest of the population, they say, hey, out of sight, out of mind. Yep. It's not affecting me.
They're warned before every inspection.
Absolutely.
You know, they know you're coming. So let's make it look good. Let's put out our best food if there is any. And so no one knows what goes on in our prison system.
That's right. We're on the downside of this one. This is AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna start wrapping things up on the subject of prison comparisons, the U.S. to other prisons in the world, and then we're also gonna cover a couple of items related to IRP news. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The United States of America incarcerates more people than any other country in the world. In fact, the U.S. hosts more prison inmates than all other developed nations combined. As of 2010, the world population was over 6.8 billion people, with an estimated 9.8 million in jail. This figure, compiled by the International Center for Prison Studies, refers both to individuals held in jail awaiting trial and inmates serving time after sentencing. So there are 9.8 million human beings on planet Earth living inside of cages that we know of. In 2010, the U.S. was home to about 309 million people, 4.5% of the world's total population, but housed 23% of the world's prisoners. So take a moment to think about what this means. It means we imprison more people than enormous autocratic countries like China. We imprison more people than Russia. Compared to the size of our population, our rate of imprisonment dwarfs our closest allies, like the United Kingdom, France, and Canada. As of 2010, there were over 1.6 million post-trial inmates serving sentences in America's state and federal facilities. This number does not include those being detained pre-trial or those on probation. The most unique feature of incarceration in America is the large and active role of our federal government. In most countries, crime is reacted to at the local or regional level, whereas the American government finances and legislates a significant portion of law enforcement at the national level. State governments still do their fair share of incarceration, though. California and Texas incarcerate more than other states, with over 171,000 inmates each. Florida is a close third, with over 103,000 prisoners. But no single state locks up more people than the federal government, with over 208,000 inmates. Perhaps the nickname Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, should be updated. Though I suppose you need to be brave to endure the highest likelihood of incarceration the world has ever known. Prisons are not what we think about when we think of America, and they shouldn't have to be. A free nation shouldn't imprison so many people, and a fiscally responsible nation can't afford to. With close to $40 billion a year in state correctional spending, the financial costs are obvious and staggering alone, but the human costs are often underappreciated. 1.6 million fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters of American families are incarcerated. It's time for people to realize that the criminal justice system in America is desperately in need of reform.
AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice around the world. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Dennis Merritt. So, Cliff, Dennis, I mean, there's a lot more information that we can cover regarding the the prisons and the prison issues, comparing the United States to other prison systems around the world. Cliff, in summary, how would you, I mean, what would be the report card for the U.S.?
Well, the U.S. has failed in so many ways when it comes to the prison system. There is no rehabilitation. There is no preparation for returning a person who, I mean, even if they did commit a crime, where is the system that is supposed to prepare this person to go back to being a viable part of society? Where is the part of the system that says we need to rehabilitate you so that we can give you a sense of self-worth, so that you don't have to go rob somebody, so that you don't have to go commit a crime to find your self-worth or do whatever it was that landed you in prison? The prison system is supposed to be a system put in place to rehabilitate, to cause penitence, to cause a person to look at what they've done to land there, for those who have done something, for the ones who are there for no reason, that they haven't even committed a crime. I mean, that's a whole nother show.
Right.
But the system is supposed to be in place to get a person to say, look, take a look at why you're here, at the reason that you're here, and convince yourself and let us help you to realize that you don't have to do something to land back here. And that all starts with, like Dennis said earlier, it starts with respect of a person as just a normal, basic human being. And without that, the prison system will never prosper in what it's meant to do. It'll prosper monetarily, but it will never be the system that converts men back to viable parts of society.
Dennis, closing thoughts on, you know, what do we as a nation need to do in order to align with some of the successes seen in other parts of the world?
First of all, there has to be transparency. I think that's like a number one goal. We have to let the American people know what we're doing with our prison system as far as housing inmates, how we're taking care of them. And then again, I have to agree with Cliff. You got to have respect. I mean, if you respect people, you're going to get respect back. And then in order to keep them from coming back, there has to be something in place to rehabilitate. And right now in our prison system, there is nothing there. They can care less whether you take a class or not. That's up to you, because we'd rather you come back, because that's going to help us with the revenue as far as money is concerned. But my biggest thing is, let's get transparent. Let's let the American people know that what we call justice, what we call our prison system as being one of the best, is the worst of the worst. Once the American people start seeing that, believe me, there's going to be an outcry. We need to get this thing fixed.
Absolutely. And there are six men right now sitting in federal prison who are examples of wrongful conviction, wrongful incarceration, wrongful, being used as pawns, if you will, that's contributing to this problem that we see.
Overcrowding,
mass incarceration. And then they're being subjected to some of the poor conditions, the poor food, the poor health situations in the prison system. That's the IRP 6. The IRP 6 are David Banks, Dave Zarpolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker. And they have been incarcerated wrongfully now for over 3 years, or right at the 3-year mark now. And this is a situation that should have never happened. And we just want to remind folks that, you know, we have people in public service who can prevent this kind of thing from happening. In the IRP 6 case, this case should have never even come to trial. We have a list of folks who were part of the IRP 6 case who at various points throughout the case could have done something to prevent this wrongful conviction. Number one, the U.S. Attorney for Colorado, you got John Walsh, and then you got Matthew Kirsch and Sunita Hazra, who were the assistant U.S. attorneys. They know that this was not, that there were not any crimes committed, but the case moved forward anyway. Greg Goldberg, who was a former assistant U.S. attorney who brought forth these trumped-up charges. Judge Arguello presided over the case, and she knows that there were so many things that went wrong in this case. And as I go down this list, you can go to freetheirp6.org, And you can look at all of the analysis that's been done regarding this case. The appellate judges, Jerome Holmes, Bobby Baldock, Harris Hartz, and then Judge Jackson, who was presented with a case regarding the missing transcript. And here again, another opportunity missed. You got Judge Schaefer, who signed off on the warrant and should have recognized the fact that there was not a case here. Darlene Martinez, the court reporter who withheld transcripts. Agent John Smith, FBI, who pushed forward on a case that he knew did not exist. Robert Moyne, who testified knowing that there was not a case. John Epke, Gary Hilberry, former agents who know that there was no problem here. Court-appointed attorneys who did absolutely nothing in support of the gentleman, who is Thomas Goodread, Clifford Bernard, Thomas Richard, Robert Berger, Mitchell Baker, Boston Staten, and then Rick Kornfeld was also one of the attorneys who participated in the case. And then our friend Mark Garagos, who did absolutely nothing, took $100,000 from the families of the IRP6 and did absolutely nothing. And then there's Susan Holland, who made threats against the IRP6 and made good on those threats. But it was all trumped up stuff. And if folks go out there to free the IRP6 again, free the IRP6, you can see for yourself. Don't take our word for it. You can see for yourself, as did the Honorable Judge H. Lee Sarakin when he reviewed this case and he said, where is the crime? Mm. There is no crime. So we invite you to do that. We want to invite you again also to go out to www.a-justcause.com and you can find out more information about A Just Cause. Go to GoFundMe.com and you can make contributions directly to the families of the IRP6 who were grossly impacted by this situation. For archives of the program, go to AJC Radio, Live365.com, or on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time, you can go to the Progressive Radio Network where you can catch us. And then for on-demand programming, you can go to the 405radio.com or to iTunes. Ask you like us on Facebook. And follow us on Twitter. Cliff,
I want to say thank you to everyone in the chat room. We appreciate all your comments and your questions. Also, I want to say thank you to our production team, Captain Kyle, Dustin Jackson of K&D Productions. They're helping out Ill Skillers Girl in the control room, making sure you hear what it is that we have to say. And also, the Honeycomb Kids back there, almost ready for prime time. Y'all will be heading it up here shortly. To the production team. Give us accurate and up-to-date information so we can pass that on to you. And to the truth, we know you're out there. We appreciate it.
On behalf of Lisa Stewart, Lamont Banks, I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Dennis Merritt. Join us each week right here on AJC Radio, Tuesday and Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. This Thursday, we're going to have an encore program. Look out for your emails and the announcements on that one. Good night, America.
Good night.
Good night.
The issue of prisoners' rights is out of sight, out of mind. But a recent hunger strike of nearly 30,000 California inmates drew international attention to the condition of America's prisons. The prisoners, who began striking in July, banded together to call for an end to the use of extended solitary confinement, a practice which many human rights groups have likened to torture. Now, after 2 months of hunger striking, the prisoners ended the protest to accept the promise of legislative hearings on the matter. But the use of solitary is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to America's incarceration machine. This country has only 5% of the world's population, yet holds 25% of the world's prisoners, according to the NAACP. Join me now to discuss how it got to be this way is Eugene Puryear, author of Shackled and Chained, Mass Incarceration in Capitalist America. Thank you so much for coming on, Eugene.
No, thank you so much for having
me. Always a pleasure. Eugene, I wanted to show this chart to our audience showing that no country incarcerates a higher percentage of its population than the U.S. What is the main factor behind this shocking statistic?
Well, I think the main factor behind this massive growth we've seen in the U.S. prison population, what's come to be known as mass incarceration, is really in the context of the development of U.S. capitalism. And ultimately, it was a surplus population problem. What you have is, if we see the post-World War II period in the United States was a period of so-called rising prosperity, it created amongst people this feeling that life should continue to always get better, the living standards should get higher. The civil rights movement raised a similar sort of the expectation among black Americans that they would be integrated into this quote-unquote American dream. But what we saw with the economic crisis of the 1970s is not just a general rightward shift in the country, but a decision that social services and jobs programs and creating jobs for people would go by the wayside, which created, with the rise of technology as well, this issue of what are you going to do with this growing number of unemployed and underemployed people, particularly those concentrated in the ghettos, as it were, the people of color, black Americans, who have a traditional revolutionary sort of a rebellious legacy in the history of the country. And that sort of confluence came together to create the policies of mass incarceration as we know them. Of course, the drug war would come a little bit later, providing a crucial fuel to that fire.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. Where I live,